now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
And welcome back in, everybody. It is another hour of Sports Daily here. It's Albrock and Caster. We're glad to be here with you on a Tuesday. We'll have a little more Royals talk for you. We'll look at the rest of this series and just any chance that the Royals can make something of it with a pretty tremendous opportunity staring them right in the face to play this team that they trail in the wild card standings. So we have that for you. We have Felix Johnson coming in about 15 minutes from now to talk a little Chiefs football, NFL football. We'll begin to look around the NFL and preview things a bit. We've got some time over the next 3 or 4 weeks before training camps begin. We really ramp up the march to the 2025 NFL season. So we have that for you as well. Your comments on our video streams are available, Facebook, YouTube, X. You can also leave us voice messages on the Odyssey app. And, of course, you can call us the good old-fashioned way on KFH at 869-1240. Max will take those calls for you. It's all what's on tap, and it's all presented there by the Wichita Brewing Company. WBC celebrates the 4th with $4 beers July 2nd through July 6th. So tomorrow through the end of the week, all three brew pubs will be offering $4 beers. A great idea if you're looking to entertain some people that maybe are in out of town. If you don't want to cook a meal while we've got a nice holiday weekend, you can go over to Wichita Brewing Company. $4 beers July 2nd through the 6th. What's on tap here on Sports Daily? Tommy, we come back in. We'll have Felix in just a minute. Let's look to this Royals series here against the Mariners directly. We've talked about the doom and gloom portion of this, and it is doomy and gloomy as the team has won just one out of its last, what are we at now? 1-9, 1-8 in those stretches since the Rangers sweep. They lost the last two against San Diego, swept by the Rays, lost 2 of 3 to the Dodgers, and now lost the opener to the Mariners. This is as bad a stretch as they've seen all year long. Their record before that, Tommy, was one game. They were at 500 going into that stretch. They were 500 on June 20th. That was not that long ago, right? And now they lose all these games, and they are 7 games under 500, and it feels hopeless at this point. Let's look at some hypotheticals, because it's July 1st, and we're, you know, we can play glass with just a little bit in it full. What if they get 3 against Arizona, they get 3 against Pittsburgh, and 3 against Miami in their next set of games? They'll also mix in a series, the rest of this series and a series with the Mets. Okay, so think about that for a second. They're at this point, and a lot of these games are on the road, they do play some bad teams coming up. And we mentioned the Diamondbacks and all their injuries. Not necessarily a bad team, but a wounded team. What if at the end of that Marlins series on July 20th, we're sitting here and they can make up 7 of those games and they're at 500 because they're playing bad teams? The schedule, we've talked about the schedule. We don't talk about it as much anymore, but I mean, the schedule is the schedule, and they have the last remaining easy portion coming after this Seattle series. What if they're 500 on July 20th? Yeah. What are we doing then?
And what if I get on a rocket and fly to Mars? I mean, like, right. we could talk about all of that. Like, at the end of the day, like, I don't care if they're playing good teams or bad teams. They're scoring 1 run a game or 2 runs a game. You know, it hasn't mattered. Like, it has the schedule has not particularly mattered as much. And I know it's been a tough stretch, and we knew that, you know, going into it when you had the Yankees and you had the Dodgers and the Padres and the Rays, they got swept by them. It's been a difficult stretch for sure, schedule-wise, for the Royals. But really, even they've had a couple of more manageable series sprinkled in there, and they've not particularly performed in those either.
White Sox.
Exactly. And so, from a hypothetical point of view, I get that. Like, yeah, sure. Like, they play bad teams. Could they beat up on them coming up? Sure. But I also see a scenario where they don't. And I think that's a more likely scenario, that they don't.
I think it's more likely.
Because here's the thing. There's 7 games under 500. As far as I'm concerned, that could be 25 games under 500. Like, that feels like nearly an impossible mountain to climb. And I know that that's pessimistic. And I know that I should probably have a little bit more optimism behind the way that the pitching has been the majority of the season and all of that. But I'm having a hard time finding concrete reasons to think that they're going to be able to pull themselves out of it. Schedule be damned. Like, I'm not sure that it matters what kind of team they're playing in the next couple of weeks. They're only scoring one or two runs a game. That's it. And
they've only been scoring one or two runs a game all season. The problem, they just went 1-5 against the White Sox and the A's.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, I am not as definitive ever in this stuff probably as you are. So I'm just trying to remember that this is a baseball season. Weird things happen in a baseball season. Major, crazy, wild swings happen in a baseball season. And I'm just trying to look at it from a perspective. It's July 1st, and if you're a Royals fan, you need the Royals to at least take you the next month, right? You need to at least get you to training camp for the NFL. And so I do think there remains a world where they can at least dangle a carrot at the end of the stick. I also don't think it's realistic at all that that is sustainable because their offense is so wildly inconsistent. But when I say things like, I think there is a heater coming at some point, and maybe it's a short-lived one, maybe it's just a 10-game stretch where they can win 8 of 10, it very likely is not going to be nearly enough for this team to reach the postseason. I hope it happens sooner than later because I want for fans to still get another good month of baseball.
What does a heater mean to you though?
Not much anymore. You know, again, like a week or two where they win 8 or 9 games, like where they put together an 8 out of 10 stretch, a 9 out of 11 stretch, or
What does that look like? And I'm not even talking about like wins and losses. I'm talking about the performance. What kind of performance constitutes a heater?
It would take a little sustained offense, which we've only seen in 4 that's or the 5 hard thing.
We haven't seen it. Like that's why
it is baseball, and they won 16 of 18 while still not scoring any runs. So it's doable, right? They've done it.
My point is that if what constitutes a heater is sustained offense, there haven't been a whole lot of examples of them being able to do that. Right. So it's going to be, if they're going to get on a heater, quote unquote, it's going to have to be another way because
it would take individuals. Like you could, I guess the question is, because we all still believe in Bobby Witt Jr. for instance, right? We've seen Vinny get on a heater. So could Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny, and I don't know, pick another player, Michael Garcia, whatever it is, could they get hot collectively for a week? Sure they can. Is that enough? The problem with the difference between now and earlier is the pitching is not the best pitching staff in baseball. It's only top 5 in baseball, right? So this was the caution to begin with. I'm just saying, like, I hope that it happens over the next month just for fans to be able to cling on to something would be really nice. Because there's almost no chance that it's going to be sustained enough for them to climb back into a playoff race. It's still possible. It is just July 1st, but it's so unlikely. Just give it to us until we can get to training camp. Is that so much to ask, Royals? Can you just hang in the race here for the next month for us? We'll see. They get Seattle for 3 games. The pitching will favor, in my opinion, the pitching will favor the Mariners, not tonight necessarily, but it's Lorenzen tonight, who's been the shakiest of the Royals starter. But then you've got to go up against Gilbert and Wu. But you got Cameron and Lugo, so it'll be pitching on pitching, except for tonight. Hey, Royals, here's an opportunity for a slugfest. Can you go get it? I don't know if you heard any of Quatraro after Sunday's loss. They all are saying the same things. Like they get it. I don't remember this group ever visibly pressing as much as they're pressing right now. That's sort of like was their superpower last year. Man, this is weighing on them right now. And I don't know how you shake that. Like, how do you take the weight of the world off your shoulders and just get after it? I don't know.
I dangled the carrot a few weeks ago. I'll dangle it again. I think you have to make a change with their hitting coach. I think that Alex Umwalt has got to be the guy. He's got to be the fall guy. Whether or not it's his fault, I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of what the Royals hitting coach does on a day-to-day basis. Somebody's got to fall on the sword. And we're at a point, and they're the worst offense in Major League Baseball. And they're showing no signs of turning it around. In fact, it's getting more and more painful to watch, to be quite honest with you. I think that, You know, I've said it before, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And I think that Matt Quatrero has got to draw a line in the sand. In my opinion, I think that's with the hitting coach. Whether or not that will wake the guys up, I have no idea. Or if it'll just cause them to press more, I don't know. I don't have a clue.
It's not going to make. I mean, it would only it's be more, a it's potential a, eye opener.
Yeah, it's a symbolic. Approaches. It's a symbolic move at best, but it's better than sitting on your hands and doing nothing, in my opinion.
And at some point, the ownership may have to come in and be like, "Yo, dude, it's him or you." With totally. Contrero, like totally, like we can't. We're not messing around with this anymore. They have too much on the line. Think about what ownership has on the line right now.
I think it sends a message to the players. It sends a message to the fan base that, hey, we're not going to tolerate this. We're not okay with it. And whether or not it actually improves things or not, that's not really the point. The point is that we're not going to be okay with the status quo moving forward.
We'll keep watching. We'll keep listening right here on KFH. They are, by the numbers and on paper, very much still in this thing. Boy, they have been playing bad for a while now. We'll come back. Felix Johnson's going to join us. We'll talk a little football when we return. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And we welcome you back in here to Sports Daily with our pal Felix Johnson, Arrowhead Addict. You can follow him on X at Felix R. Johnson, all kinds of stuff, working through the offseason. Felix, it's just like finding a pot of gold when you get a real-life NFL trade to talk about. Jalen Ramsey for Minkah Fitzpatrick. What is this, a baseball trade?
Yeah, you're getting
player
starters.
Player? What in the world? It's an interesting one.
I think that's the craziest part, is that you're getting starters for starters. And I mean, we're sitting here first day of July, so it'd be kind of ridiculous to trade for picks at this point, because you wouldn't be able to use them until 2026. And so it is awesome that it works out that way for both teams, that they're going to get contributors for week one. But it kind of shifts both defenses, where Mike Tomlin and the Steelers have been running basically this Tampa defense forever, because that's what Mike Tomlin has been doing, because he was with Tony Dungy back in the day with the Buccaneers. And things are kind of moving back to what they like to do. And so adding another corner, especially a hybrid like Jalen Ramsey, and seeing what he's going to be able to do and what he has been able to do over the course of his career, is going to make that defense even better than what it usually is, unless the Steelers trade TJ Watt, which was something that came out. That's just another weird thing that Pittsburgh might do. And then on Miami's front, they have a pretty good pass rush. The only thing that they needed was a safety, and the reunion that we thought was going to happen for the last couple of weeks was going to be between Jalen Ramsey and the Rams. Turns out it was Minkah Fitzpatrick and the Dolphins. And so, like, I don't think either defense got better necessarily. They just changed, because you're kind of giving a secondary playmaker for another secondary playmaker. Where it's kind of interesting is, is kind of in the margins where they get another starter, another contributor at least. Jonnu Smith is going to the Pittsburgh Steelers, where he's your more motion tight end, a guy that can move around a little bit. And so it's going to be interesting to see what he's going to be able to do with Aaron Rodgers, and because that's when Aaron Rodgers was the most effective with Matt LaFleur, and when the offense was a little bit more fluid and able to move around. So I think things got more interesting defensively for both teams, but only the Steelers got better. But even then, it doesn't really matter because of all the other things that are happening around both teams.
Yeah, it's been such an interesting and dare I say bizarre offseason for the Steelers. Obviously trading away George Pickens, but then getting DK Metcalf and acquiring Aaron Rodgers, trading away Minka Fitzpatrick, and then now it looks like maybe they might trade TJ Watt, and teams are looking at potentially what they want to offer the Steelers for TJ Watt. So it's kind of like a rebuild, but then it's also not a rebuild. Like, I have no idea how to really categorize what the Steelers are trying to do this offseason.
It is kind of weird where they let George Pickens go, and there's talk of them letting go of TJ Watt. So like, as soon as they get somebody interesting to add to one side of the ball, they're like, all right, let's take the most interesting part out, at least that we had. And it is kind of weird that it's happening, but what have we known about the Steelers for all three of our lifetimes? They just want to win as much as they can. And so holding on to TJ Watt makes the most sense. And I think they're just kind of saying, if we can get three first round picks, which it's TJ Watt, you very well might, then I think they would at least take a few phone calls. But I don't think you sign Aaron Rodgers to the deal that you signed him to. You're getting him there in the offseason to not try and go all in this season. And again, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is what they do every season, and they're still probably going to win 8, maybe 10 games at the most.
Well, I think that's, as we're talking to Felix Johnson here, our NFL insider this time of year, our Chiefs insider during the season. The Steelers are better than they were a year ago. Is that an accurate statement? I think it is. If TJ Watt's there. If TJ Watt is there, their line is better. Aaron Rodgers is better than Russell Wilson, in my opinion, at this point in their careers. DK Metcalf is less of a headache and still a supremely talented player if you're swapping he and Pickens, and probably is a better fit for Aaron Rodgers, honestly, than George Pickens would have been. They add Jonnu Smith. Their line's better. If they keep TJ Watt, they're going to be a better team than they were a year ago, most likely. But do they really care? I think is the big question. Like, are they just sort of bridging to keep their competitive? They're never bad.
Exactly.
So are they just bridging it? And if they're just bridging it, which I honestly, personally, I think would be fine if that's what they're doing, then yeah, you listen to entertain Watt offers for the 30-year-old TJ Watt. I mean, he's 30 years old. So if somebody's going to blow you away, sure, listen. He didn't want to be there anyway. So I'm fine with it either way. I think we're mischaracterizing what this has been. And I was guilty of this too, but I don't believe this anymore. They didn't bring Aaron Rodgers in there because they thought he was going to win them a Super Bowl. They brought Aaron Rodgers in because they don't ever want to be bad, and he's better than what they had. And they're also doing a variety of other things organizationally.
I think that's the reality. I think if you ask, obviously, if you ask Mike Tomlin, they're trying to win the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
And if you were looking at the grand scheme of things, like, sure, Sam Darnold and bringing Russell Wilson back, what was the best opportunity for the Pittsburgh Steelers to try and win a Super Bowl in 2025? It probably was bringing in Aaron Rodgers. And I guess making the trade for DK Metcalf and letting George Pickens go for all the reasons that you just said. They might be better than what they were last year, but does it matter? Because they're not better than Baltimore. They're probably not better than Cincinnati if they can figure some things out defensively and with a new coordinator. And I'm assuming that Joe Burrow and the receivers that they have are going to be those guys. And then even then, Cleveland might knock a game off of you because Joe Flacco is going to be hot for about 3 weeks of the season. And so you might catch those 3 weeks of the year. And so I think you're absolutely right. Like, sure, they might be better than last year, but at best of the third best team in the AFC North. And that still might get them into the playoffs because it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And we've seen them do that just about every year, but they're not better necessarily.
Felix, let's talk a little bit about the Chiefs. I know that in the last week or so, we got the news that Josh Simmons would be fully ready to go for training camp. Andy Reid talked about that. He was brought up on an episode of New Heights with Jason and Travis Kelce, and Jason Kelce compared Josh Simmons to Trent Williams, said that he hasn't seen anybody do what Josh Simmons did in college since Trent Williams.
In college, right.
But that's a lofty comparison, right? And so I think that obviously the expectations are he's going to be healthy for training camp, but I would imagine he may very well end up being the left tackle starting player week one for the Chiefs. What'd you feel about that comparison, and what are you seeing with him?
Some part of me is just trying to be cautiously pessimistic, if that's a real thing, just because of the injury and the last few years. We've talked about it 100 times, just because we've seen the Chiefs draft tackles and they just haven't worked out for one reason or another. And this is probably the highest graded prospect that they have drafted, obviously, at least in the only guy they've drafted in the first round. Kingsley Suamataia was the first one they drafted in the second round before that. So they've increased, it's obviously become a bigger problem over the years. So they've increased where they're drafting guys at. But it is interesting to hear a guy like Travis Kelce, who's probably on his last year of the NFL. He's been around a lot of football. Jason Kelce, who was the best center in football for a very long time. Trey Smith, who is also a premier guard in the NFL. And obviously, these guys are biased, and in Jason Kelce's case, it's semi-biased. And so it is at least interesting to hear these guys talk about it, because he was this prospect that could have went in the top 10 of the draft, just like Trent Williams did however many years ago. So maybe they're right. I hope they're right. They have to be right, because I don't think the Chiefs would have made this move, because there were a few other spots, like we were talking about leading up to the draft, that the Chiefs could have got a contributor at. They could be getting a contributor at the only spot that they were really lacking at last year, and that could be huge.
Well, and the other thing is, too, like, of all the experiments that the Chiefs have gone through to try to find tackles over the last few years, it's only this injury. Like, Josh Simmons is not, it's not just Kelce saying, like, he's universally considered as, like, gifted and skilled a college tackle, right, as we've seen, you know, like Trent Williams, like guys like it, like, There was general consensus that, you know, skill wise, this guy was premier, that premier type tackle. It was just an injury. So the Chiefs have tried so many different things that are outside the box, right? Finding right tackles, making them left tackles, finding guys like Suamataia, who maybe doesn't even project as a like all of these things that they've tried over the years. This is the first one where it's like, nah, this dude's a really good left tackle. His concern was his injury. So I think if the injury's good, and it's still, I'm going to be a little bit, I believe everybody when they say he's fully ready to go. And if he is, and everybody lets him slide, and he is as gifted as most think he is. If not, I've never heard anybody say his skill set doesn't translate. But right, if he really is that skilled and he is ready to go week one, and that many teams let him slide because they were like, what are they looking at that's crazy to me.
And there were like four or five tackles that went in the first round. And Josh Simmons made it. He was the very last pick of the very first round. So it is kind of interesting on that front. But, I mean, there was a reason why 31 teams passed on. I don't know why, what that is. And maybe the Chiefs just kind of said, all right, we need a tackle. And he was the highest guy on the highest graded player on the board. I wasn't in the draft room. But for all the reasons that we've talked about, he has all the skill set, has the college resume. He has the endorsement from three guys, and one that's not really even in the organization that's giving him the highest endorsement of all. I am optimistic, but also I'm cautiously pessimistic, just because that's probably more my problem than it is anybody else.
We're getting ready for training camp a couple of weeks away, you know, getting started for the Chiefs, and there are going to be some interesting positional battles. I know, like, one of the things I always look at is who's going to be at the very bottom of the wide receiver depth chart for the Chiefs. There are a handful of guys that are going to be battling for probably one spot down at the very bottom of the depth chart. Again, names that we're all familiar with, and Justin Ross and Sky Moore and Nico Remigio, and like there are guys that are going to be battling for that. I'm sure there are other pretty intriguing positional battles. Are there any that you're keeping an eye on as we're getting ready for training camp?
I am interested, like you're saying, with the wide receiver position. I'm interested, and it's more about like how guys are playing. Like, how does Rashee Rice look? How does Hollywood Brown look in his in a full training camp after the injury that he suffered? Jalen Royals, where is he going to fit in? Is he going to be a guy that's regularly contributing, or is he going to be like that fifth receiver off the bench? So I agree completely with that front. And then we've talked about Josh Simmons as much as we can. What I'm interested in is how these front seven guys kind of fit into the roster as well. How Omar Norman Lott, how Asher Gelati kind of fits in, just because we've talked about it. Some of these guys, George Karloftis might be on his way out. There's a few different things that the Chiefs might have to do, at least in the front seven, because this is as much as they're trying to win right now, this is a 3-4-5 year plan that they have in front of them just by the way that they've been drafting. And so it is going to be interesting to see how these younger contributors on the defensive side start to fit in, and even more so how the safeties look. Jaden Hicks, who's coming in for Justin Reed, who's no longer going to be with the Chiefs, and seeing how these guys who we've seen play really, really well over the first 3 or 4 years of their career, but this is the year where they're getting, it's a contract year for a lot of them, but also at the same time, how do they fit in these upgraded roles?
Well, and I forgive me if I've asked you this. I don't think you and I have talked about this or with Tommy here. Last year, it was about this time. We had Mitch Holthus on, and he told us he thought the defense could be better than it was 2 years ago. We're both like, really? Are you sure? Because 2 years ago, it was one of the best in the league. He wasn't that far off, if not right. So I wonder this year, how do you think this defense can compare to the defense of the last couple of years, which in all reality has led the Chiefs far more than the offense? I don't think that's going to happen this year. I think the offense will lead the defense a little bit this year. Can the defense, though, be in the same ballpark it's been in the last couple of years with all these changes?
I think so. I think the only that. And I've been on this for a couple of years. I don't think there is a reason why the Chiefs defensive line couldn't lead the NFL in sacks, especially if you have a guy like Chris Jones that could get 15 for you in the middle and then absorb a double team, or he's just that dominant where he just increases his number to 20 or something like that. It sounds really simple, but at the same time, we've seen different things like that. And Chris Jones has been on the ballot for defensive player of the year, so we know that he's capable of a lot of different things. And George Karloftis is coming up, and a lot of the timing things that we just got done talking about. So I think this particular year, because of a lot of the timing that we've talked about, guys are getting into contract years. They're going to be paid by the Chiefs or someone else, or it is rookies coming in and hungry, trying to prove themselves on the team that has played in the last three Super Bowls. And so I think that is the interesting part about what Brett Veach has done, and what a lot of general managers tend to do across the NFL, and you see it with Les Snead in the Rams, is that obviously you have a lot of experience with your quarterback and your head coach and guys that have been around and on other parts of your roster, but also you're drafting players that need to be contributors on day one, and so they're hungry as soon as they walk into the NFL, because yes, they're trying to win a Super Bowl, but they're trying to get their second contract. They're just trying to eat. So I mean, it's the combination of hunger and experience that makes teams really good, and I think the Chiefs have done a really good job of that over the last couple of years, and this is just another example of it.
It's all good stuff. Felix, what do you have coming for us in your writings and musings this week?
We have a new episode of the Let's Talk Ball podcast with me and Cody Alexander on the Match Quarters YouTube page. We'll have an episode with Anthony Lawson coming up tomorrow. We've got Let's Talk Ball Extra talking about the trade that we discussed at the beginning of this, Jalen Ramsey. We talked a little bit about Jair Alexander last week too. So you can get caught up on all of our different pods and everything. We try and keep everything football centric because it's one of the few football shows that talks about football.
And only football. And Felix is going to put it all out there for you. Follow him on X at Felix R. Johnson. We appreciate it. Every week we do this is 1 week closer to kickoff. We're getting
there. Appreciate you, gentlemen.
There goes Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider. We double him over as NFL insider. What did you think? Were you surprised at all at that Steelers-Dolphins trade? I mean, obviously, we were all surprised by it, I think. But are you surprised that kind of trade still happens in the NFL? We don't ever see that.
I don't know if I was surprised.
Never see trades like
I don't
that.
Know if I was surprised by the trade. I'm having a really hard time wrapping my head around the strategy of the Steelers. Like what they're doing this offseason. It doesn't mean that it's a bad trade. Like they got Jalen Ramsey and Jonnu Smith. I mean, for sure, like you're going to take that. I just can't wrap my head around what their overall front office strategy is.
This TJ Watt situation is really interesting. TJ Watt is an unbelievable player, Hall of Famer. How do you not listen? He's 30. He's 30. Like, what does that look like in 3 years? If one of these teams really, it would be so hard, especially for a team like the Steelers, because Tomlin is, you know, hell-bent on winning every game he plays, and so is the front office and the ownership. But if TJ Watt has, it'd be different if TJ Watt never said a word, right? But he seems disgruntled for whatever reason. Maybe it's just a contract and they can settle that out. But man, I'd at least take the call. I would take the call. If somebody's offering you multiple first, three first round, but whatever it is, as many as they've got, like I'm listening if I'm the Steelers. Because the reality is, like, they're probably a 10-win team without TJ Watt, and they're probably a 10-win team with TJ Watt. As great as he is, that feels like their destiny.
I don't think they're going to
be that middle of the pack.
And I don't think they're going to take the call. I mean, it sounds like they're pretty committed to signing him to an extension. But they don't negotiate during the season. The Steelers don't do that. So They've got to get it done sooner rather than later. I have no idea. I think it's going to be a stalemate for a while.
Yeah, the Steelers have had the two juiciest storylines of the offseason. Never thought that would happen. That never does happen for them either. Royals baseball tonight on KFH. In Seattle facing the Mariners. You can tune in 97.5, 1240 KFH tonight. 8:30 for coverage beginning. Or listen online at kfhradio.com. Also on the Odyssey app, which is free. Just search KFH. I've been looking around, Tommy, as we continue to opine about the Royals and what they should do and what they could trade away. And, you know, is there any hope at all, maybe a snowball's chance in hell, that they can climb back into the playoff race, all of these things. And I keep going back to Seth Lugo. Every list you see basically starts with like Sandy Alcantara. Okay, as the top pitcher on the market. Sandy Alcantara has a 6.98 ERA this year. He had a 4.14 ERA last year. It's been that long since he's been a really good player, and he was for a couple of years, 3 and 4 years ago. He has been pitching a little bit better lately, but in his last three starts, Tommy, he's given up 12 runs. So he's the guy that everyone keeps pointing at, this ace that's available and everything. I'm like, man, then I go look at Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo's got a 2.74 ERA this year and a 1.08 whip. Seth Lugo has been, since becoming a starting pitcher, which happened for him with the Padres essentially in 2023, has had a 3.57 ERA in his first year as a starter, a 3 ERA, where he was a 5-plus war pitcher last year, and he's on pace to be better than both of those seasons this year. He's got a better ERA. He's got a better whip. I mean, if this plays out, Seth Lugo, to me, becomes by far one of, if not the most valuable trade assets on the market. I mean, what are people... What is the national narrative missing? Maybe they just think the Royals are still quote-unquote contenders, and so he's not available. But even on lists where I've seen him available, he's still underneath other guys. There is not a more impactful pitcher to me that's going to be available than Seth Lugo.
Well, that's the key point. Is he going to be available? We don't know.
Sure.
I mean, J.J. Piccolo has been pretty steadfast in, you know, keeping his cards close to his chest and not revealing what plans are, and he may not even know what the plans are. I mean, the record and the way the team has played recently would lend me to believe that he probably is still on the fence about, you know, what they're going to do. And I think that it's going to be a matter. I don't even want to say that it's a national narrative that's being crafted that Lugo is not included. It just may very well be that if Seth Lugo is going to get moved, other teams are going to have to be the ones to initiate that. that it may not very well be JJ Piccolo going out and putting him on the open market and saying, I'm going to take the highest bidder for Seth Lugo. It may very well be other teams coming to him and saying, we would like Lugo. What's it going to take to get him on the team? The other point that I'm going to make is that I've looked at a lot of lists, and while Sandy Alcantara is on those lists, there are much better pitchers that I'm seeing that are higher up on lists than Sandy Alcantara. Names like Freddie Peralta is on the list, and Merrill Kelly from the Diamondbacks is on the list. There are several others. Edward Cabrera, Mitch Keller. There are other names that are better, at least have a better stat line, better ERA overall than what Alcantara has done for the Marlins this year. So while they might move him, there are some other high profile pitchers
that are
out there.
Those guys, though, none of them sniff what Lugo has done the last 3 years. None of them do. I agree with you. The only part of this we don't really know is, like, is there any indication from the Royals that Lugo would exercise his player option and play for $15 million next year? Maybe he loves it that much. That would be, look, if I knew that, I would say, well, just hang on to him. Don't trade him, right? Use him next year. Because, again, back to what we talked about earlier, the Royals, there's no rebuild here. Like, if they end up falling out and staying out of this and they can't ever climb back in this year, they immediately next year have the expectation to reach the postseason. So if he's given you any indication that he would exercise that player option for $15 million, then yeah, you don't trade him. But there's almost no world financially where you can see that happening. Never know. They re-signed Michael Wacha. Who knows, right? Like, that would be the X factor. But again, if you've got potentially, and I think he would be, as valuable or the most valuable trade asset on the market this year, at least from a pitching perspective, and maybe overall, the Royals, and they don't have to do this. They have a month to think about this and let it simmer. Why? Like, you've got to really consider it. Like, if you're not, if something drastic doesn't change in the month of July and you're sitting there, and Lugo hasn't told you, you know what, I can pitch for $15 million next year. Or let's rework a deal and I'll pitch for $18 million and we'll just do it. You know, I love it here. I want to be here. Like, unless that's happening, I think you've got to, like, quietly be aggressive with it and just be like, here's the deal. We're not, you know, like, he can be available. We're not motivated, but motivate us. Because their teams in a tight race like this, every single team in baseball essentially could use a Seth Lugo. You know who has a billion prospects and no place for them on their roster that could really use a starting pitcher? How about the Dodgers? You don't think the Dodgers would unload the Brinks truck? What do they have? What do they care about prospects? They have tons of them. Like, you don't think the Dodgers would back up the Brinks truck to bring in Seth Lugo? He'd be their number one guy.
I think the Cubs could absolutely use, sure, Seth Lugo. They've got the wherewithal, I think, to make something like that happen. And, you know, to be pretty attractive to what the Royals are looking to do. I have no issue at all if the Royals decide they want to move Seth Lugo and if they feel like they can get a return for him. I've got no issue with that whatsoever. I think they've got enough arms in that starting rotation and guys that are coming back that, you know, I think the return would be better than if they kept him on the roster and then he ends up leaving anyway. So I've got no issue with that. In fact, that would be the move that I feel like the Royals could make, that they could find other areas to improve right away where it wouldn't be a detriment to the team moving Seth Lugo. And they've got enough rotation pieces that I think they would be okay. So if JJ Piccolo decides he wants to be aggressive with Lugo, I'm not going to fault him whatsoever. For me, it's a little bit different than a guy like Noah Cameron. I'm going to need to be wowed, and I'm going to need to have it be the right fit and a long-term piece for the Royals that can actually be impactful for them for years to come before I'm okay with moving a guy like Noah Cameron. But Seth Lugo, if you can get a return right away and it's going to help you and it's going to make your offense better, sign me up. I'm on board for that.
Yeah, I mean, Cameron would be a strength-to-strength trade. Like, you're only including him in deals like Jaron Durant, right, which would still make sense for you. No, Lugo's going to go down as one of the great free agent signings of all time. I mean, especially for the Royals. But even across, like, when was the last time you remember the sort of production from a free agent over a stretch now for a guy. I mean, he's been incredible for $15 million a year for a starting pitcher to give you on average about a 2.85 ERA and a whip just over one. I mean, it has been insane how good and effective he's been as a starting pitcher.
Who would you feel like, just, you know, hypothetically speaking, if they move Seth Lugo, is there a name in return that you feel like is valid, or maybe it's names, multiple names, that you feel like they should go after or get from an offensive perspective that could help them?
Yeah. So I think like you have to shoot for the moon. You have to look at like the Phillies. If the Phillies got in, I'm just trying to think of the teams who do enough in free agency, right? Where they kind of make you think about this stuff. So who is motivated? Like if I'm calling the Phillies right now and the Phillies would like to add that piece to try to win a World Series, that conversation for me starts with Andrew Painter, number 5 overall prospect in baseball, who's a pitcher. The Dodgers are an interesting organization because they've kind of tapped in a lot, but they have. And the thing about them is like I'm looking at them, they've got 3 prospects in the top 40. I want 2 of them. Right. And I don't know their names as well. I'm just looking at a ranking list here. They're not like the highest end, but they're 3 in the top 4. I want 2 of them. I would shoot that high if I was the Royals. Other teams that could get into that conversation that might be motivated, the Giants. They are an aggressive team. I don't think the Yankees, who are also aggressive, have the need as much as some of these others. The Cubs don't have the top end prospects, but they have enough. Every team in baseball has enough of them. Basically, every team in baseball has more of them than the Royals currently have. So you just have to put together. I don't know if they'll be able to get a blue chip prospect out of it because the team that they match up with might not have one. But you're looking at like, I need 3 legit bona fide, like these project as big league player type prospects as you can give me in order to make a move like that. Lugo is probably a rental, right? That's the only thing, is he's probably a rental and teams have been less inclined to do that over the years. But if you were the Phillies right now in the position that they're in, you have Andrew Painter, who's this all-world prospect, right? He's been ready to come up, it feels like, forever. Would you give him up for Seth Lugo this year? Because if I'm the Phillies?
I would look at that potentially.
So I think you can attack it a lot of different ways if you're the Royals. Do you look for that one blue chipper? Or do you look for, and this is probably more likely and maybe a better reality for the Royals anyway, do you look for 3 or 4 of a team's top 5 or 6 prospects to really bolster that farm and build yourself up? Because the reality is they can turn around and flip some of those players in the offseason if they want to be aggressive that way too and bring in a big league ready player. You're just giving yourself the ammunition for a player that almost certainly, unless there's a conversation we don't know about, going to exercise his player option for $15 million next year. Seth Lugo, Tommy, has pitched like a $30 million a year pitcher. Easily by the standards now that we see free agent. If Seth Lugo hit the market right now, let me look at real quick.
Well, he's going to get, I mean, the Royals are going to get outbid. Like if he hits the market, well, right?
They'll have to get outbid. They can't. Yeah. Stick around.
Let me throw a trade out at you. Let me throw a team out at you. You mentioned Sandy Alcantara. The Marlins are going to be sellers for the most part, it looks like. Alcantara is on the block, probably. So is Jesus Sanchez, their outfielder. Both of those guys are under team control for a few years. I mean, could the Royals look at packaging something up? Man, maybe it's Noah Cameron. Maybe it's Seth Lugo. Maybe it's both of them. You trade 2 pitchers away and you get Alcantara and you get Jesus Sanchez back. Because at that point,
the Marlins would lose DeGrom. I mean, they would lose Lugo. So I don't think they, but to an aggressive trade with the seller, yeah, I think the Royals can make moves like that. That's where Boston comes in. Highest paid pitchers right now are around 25 to 70 million when you go to Shohei, but 25 to 40, Lugo's making at least 20. He's going to hit the market, almost certainly. All right, that does it for us. Again, Royals baseball tonight at 8:30. Boy, it does feel like the sky is falling. maybe they can find an umbrella, maybe they can do something special in this series. Like, if they can win three games in a row against the Mariners, they're right there. Just trying as hard as I can to be as optimistic as I can. But my goodness, score dang runs, boys. That game is tonight. We'll be back here tomorrow to talk about it. We've also got Shreya Flotta in. KU has made a couple additions. It'll be a good conversation with Shreya in the basketball world. So we'll do all that tomorrow. Our thanks to Felix Johnson today. Tommy, enjoy the Tuesday.
Yeah, it should be a nice day out there. Get out and enjoy it. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
For Max, for Tommy, I'm Jacob. See you then.